This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. And my air conditioning is going to go on high because I actually had it on high. I was cooling down the car before I got started. It's a beautiful, balmy day today in the Ozarks. I saw an email that came in while I was at another programmer's desk, and this lady was telling the programmer that she had just got back from lunch, and according to her car, pavement, 100 degrees. Which, you know, I mean, heat bounces off black asphalt, so asphalt, however you want to say it. Anyway, so all is well at work. We're puttering along. We're getting things done. Moving forward day by day. We did a big install this week. It was the August deployment for our K2 forms. And so far, so good. That seems to have gone okay, which is good. It's always nice when you're not getting a lot of calls because things aren't working anymore. So that's good. We did deploy a bunch of different forms, 5 different forms. Could have been 7, but we just weren't quite there yet. I had a little excitement on Monday when I was heading to work first thing on Monday. I've been trying to get to work about 7:45 so that I could work to 4:15, then leave and go see my dad before supper, because he really likes me to come and take him down to supper. So, you know, that's fine. And that has to happen about 10 till 5, and so if I leave at 4:15, to his place about 4:30, and then we have about 20 minutes where we can just talk for a little bit, and then I can take him down, and then I can head home. So I was running a little bit late, and I thought, well, I'll get there at 8, and I'll only work 8.25 hours as opposed to 8.5 hours, because I have some extra days in August. Great, great, great. I'm driving in, and there's one spot on the drive in about halfway into town where there's a 4-way stop. And I came up over the hill, and there was traffic lined all the way back to me. I was like, what? So I thinks to myself, well, I guess it's time to take a detour, so I'll just cut over to 65 South, because that was the closest cutter over E2E point at that point. I'll just cut over there, and then we'll be okay. So I started cutting over there, and I got about halfway over to 65 South, and suddenly I realized there is a whole bunch of cars coming back towards me from 65 South, and I thought, this, what, how, what? And then about 2/3 of the way to 65 South, 3/4 of the way 65 South, there were so many cars, I was just like, they have closed 65 South because they've been doing some road work down there. So I got down there, sure enough, it was dead closed. There was not even a single lane of traffic. And they were rerouting everybody down to the small little state highway with the 4-way stop. And so that's why everything was clogged up. So eventually I made it back to my house, wound down another way, made it in. So that was a little exciting. Hasn't been nearly that bad since then, because I think people have just figured out, hey, need to go a different way. So they just go that way. The writing's going along fine. Fine, fine, fine. I'm closing in on the end of this book. There's still a few things to work out, but we'll get them worked out. It'll be fine. I'm about 500 words behind right now this week. But it's okay. That's okay. I might be able to make that up tonight, because tonight is only a 500 word night, and I'm in a fast enough section that I might be able to just get caught up tonight. We'll see. We'll see. Give it a shot. See what happens. I did not do any writing last night. I had some other things intrude on my time, and by the time I actually got done, I was getting a little blitzed because it was fast day, and then in addition to that, I had a 6 o'clock breakfast this morning, so ta-da. But anyways, get back on track tonight. This week, I was... thinking about, okay, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? You know, I was going a different direction for what I was thinking about doing. And then I just couldn't get away from something that I had mentioned a couple of weeks ago, because just in the sporadic few little side comments that the person who was talking about it said, I was like, what? Wait a minute. Hold it. And I think I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago. It is about an object called E8. E as in elephant, 8 as in the number 8. As in 6, 7, 8. As in a count off for choreography. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Dance. So I was this mathematician, Eric Weinstein, I think, is who I was listening to. And he was talking. This is a hardcore mathematician, hard-nosed rationalist. And he was talking about this thing called E8, this beautiful, symmetrical object called E8. And how that it might have some meaning in our world, and it might somehow describe our world, even though that, you know, and he, just in the things that he said about it, I was like, what? So, I've been kind of digging around for a little bit, and I came back and I saw that I had bookmarked that talk, and then I went on to YouTube. This was one of the reasons I didn't get any writing done last night, because I was doing a little extra research. So I'm going to give you my very limited understanding of this at this point. And of course, this stuff is all up in the air. Nothing's been proved yet. But I find this fascinating. Specifically from the viewpoint that reality seems to be somewhat pliable to our beliefs and our belief structures. By that, I mean, if you see the world in a certain way, you have a tendency to discover things that have the world in that way, and the world seems to be such that it can help you prove that. It's there's this thing, and specifically, I've mentioned this before, the fact that Einstein can sit in a room and think and come up with formulas that work, that's amazing to me. Just as amazing as Niels Bohr sitting in a room and playing with mathematics and coming up with stuff that work. And even more amazing, the stuff that Einstein has come up with versus the stuff that Niels Bohr has come up with, they don't really mesh together, and yet they both seem to work. Even more amazing, Einstein had a basic philosophy. He was a deist, I believed, and so he believed in a certain order in the universe, because I think he did believe in some sort of design, maybe not a designer, I don't know, something. Whereas Niels Bohr, if I remember correctly, was a Buddhist, and they don't necessarily believe in any order in the universe. Things are more chaotic. And quantum theory is much more chaotic than the theory of relativity that Einstein came up with. So you have these general beliefs about life that, within those beliefs, people develop theories that work, and yet they don't seem to be related to each other. I find that fascinating. So, one of the big theories in quantum mechanics, quantum physics, is string theory. String theory was supposed to be the end-all, be-all theory of everything. People have been working on it for a while now, and there is dissension in the ranks. Because there's things about string theory that some people, I don't have an opinion, I don't have any idea, but there seems to be some dissension in the ranks as to whether or not string theory is actually the thing that's going to be the theory of everything. And there's another guy that's come up with another theory, and other people are kind of piling on board with it now. And I came across a video by Quantum Gravity Research. And it was sort of like an approachable people's version of what this guy's idea is. And it will come back to E8 in a little bit. So let me see if I can even handle a dumbed-down explanation of the dumbed-down explanation that was in the video. Not to say that the video was dumb. I thought they did a really good job of at least trying to present the basics, but the basics of complicated mathematics and complicated higher dimensions are still not very basic. I mean, they used a lot of examples, and I'll try to regurgitate some of those, but if you want to go watch the video, it's called Hacking Reality, and it is by Quantum Gravity Research. Because quantum gravity is the thing. They want to unify the worlds of gravity in terms of the theory of relativity, Einstein's, with quantum mechanics. Because those things haven't been unified yet. Okay, so they were talking about higher dimensions and the fact that we live in a three-dimensional world, but we have at least some familiarity with a two-dimensional world, because a two-dimensional world is like a really, really, really thin piece of paper. Just go with it. Really, really thin piece of paper. So on this piece of paper, we can do things. We can draw circles. We can draw squares. We can draw repeating circles and repeating squares. And we can, for instance, figure out how to pack spheres, circles, two-dimensional circles, as tightly as possible on this plane of this piece of paper. And I think it's called the hexagonal arrangement. Because as you pack these circles together that are all the same size, perfect circles, and you draw a center point where each of those circles are, and then you draw lines between them, they make a bunch of hexagons that are all joined together. You can do the same basic thing with spheres in three dimensions, and you can pack them all together, and it ends up looking like a bunch of oranges stacked at the supermarket, because they just naturally form into that pattern. And again, you can take all the individual dots from those, and you can show that, and it's only recently been proven, but you can show what this arrangement of dots, this point space, they call it this point space, looks like in three dimensions. Well, you can also have a four-dimensional sphere, five-dimensional sphere, six-dimensional sphere, seven, eight, blah, 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 blah. So you can just keep doing this exercise. Well, when you get to eight dimensions, the point space for an eight-dimensional close-packing set of spheres, for some reason, is very beautiful. And I've seen it, you know, I've seen it described as, well, when you run the calculations on reflections, the reflections do end, they don't go to infinity like they do when you have two mirrors and blah, 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 blah. And eight dimensions is as high as you can go, where it's not reflective like that. Everything over eight dimensions is reflective, etc. There's all this gobbledygook about why this is such a cool thing, this E8. But you know, when you just do a little research on this EA, the scientists, the mathematicians who work with this stuff, they seem to all think this is a really beautiful, beautiful thing. Okay, so good enough. And they were also talking about, well, okay, so. Let's not go there yet. So, then you got this guy. And this guy didn't really like string theory. He kind of had studied it. He's a theoretical physicist. He had kind of studied it. And there were some things about it he just didn't like. Felt like things were being forced, that it wasn't very elegant, that it was just being cobbled together, etc., etc., etc. So he decides to kind of think about some other possibilities. And there was a theory before string theory that was, instead of saying that everything was vibrating strings down at the core of our reality, and that's what actually caused this, these higher dimensional strings, they named something called fibers. So the example they gave was, let's say that you have a three-dimensional fiber that is touching a two-dimensional plane. And all you would see on that two-dimensional plane is a tiny point. So they said, let's say that this three-dimensional fiber is oriented a certain way, then maybe what you see on the plane is a photon. That's all, though. One tiny little point. Because you can't see the rest of the structure because you don't exist in those higher dimensions. So that's kind of the idea. And he started revisiting that idea, started thinking about how multidimensional structures would reflect down into, would project down into lower dimensions, what they would look like. They wouldn't necessarily be completely symmetrical and repeating, because if you would think of something like a checkerboard, except all of the edges are like steel rods and you're shining light through it, provided that you hold the checkerboard perfectly perpendicular to the ground, and the light is perfectly perpendicular to the checkerboard, then of course it's going to look like a checkerboard. But if you tilt that a little bit, then you get a projection that is not perfectly symmetrical. And you can move this checkerboard around and you get all sorts of different projections. So this guy was also bothered by the fact that I, as most theoretical physicists are, bothered by the fact that you've got these two competing theories, theory of relativity and quantum mechanics, that are both extremely useful and yet don't seem to be unified anywhere. And he was thinking about the fact that Einstein's explanation for the theory of relativity is very geometrical. In the simplest forms, space is like a fabric. Things that have mass make a dimple in that fabric, and then other things conform to those curves, and that's how you get gravity. Very geometrical explanation. So he thought, you know, I wonder if there's a way to use geometry, use mathematics, and come up with a way to say, okay, so this is geometry as well, which would be very interesting. And in fact, long story short, he ended up looking at this E8 structure, and specifically how in one particular projection of this E8 structure that you could find particles, basic, I think, all of the fundamental particles that we know about now actually plug into intersection points in this structure. So You've got this structure that everybody agrees is extremely element that elegant that exists in eight dimensions, and when you image it just right, all of a sudden what we know about spin and force and charge and all that kind of stuff plug in to this structure. And it also predicts a bunch of other particles that haven't been found yet. And so people are now saying, well, you know, if there's something to this, then we should be able to find the structures here and there and there and there and there and there. But what was fascinating to me, and then we'll wrap it up for the day, is that at one point in the documentary, the interviewer says, so that seems kind of weird that you just had this mathematical structure that just seemed elegant and symmetrical. I don't know if this is exact words, but this is basically it. So you just used math to figure out this structure in eight dimensions. And then it seems to provide at least a partial map for the nature of our reality. And the guy kind of grins and he says, yeah, that's kind of weird. Because it gets back to me from that thing of, well, how is it that people can just sit in rooms and come up with ideas about the nature of reality and find something useful? How is it this guy, who is a self-proclaimed beach and surf bum, just has this idea that, well, I'd like it to be geometry. And then he just takes what is considered to be this elegant shape and he fiddles around with its projection and finds a projection that lines up with at least some of our reality. That's really fascinating to me. Because it doesn't seem like it should be that way. And at least one of the guys who's studying this whole thing that has kind of dedicated his life to figuring this out, you know, they kind of see energy not just as this mysterious thing, but they see energy as information, that it's, you know, maybe not ones and zeros, but it is, I won't say manufactured, but it is encoded. And they use the term language, that you take this E8 and when you run it through, what did they call it, an irrational transformation into lower dimensions or something like that, that they begin to talk about what happens in language that is evocative of more than just materialism, that is evocative of some sort of foundational intelligence. So it's just really interesting. It's going to be really interesting just to see how this all plays out. Because if this E8 structure in its irrational projection down into three dimensions, if in fact they find more and more particles that are exactly where this projection says they're supposed to be, then the theory is that, in fact, we are living in a world where there are these fibers and they're arranged into some kind of structure that the edges of which are touching our world, and that becomes the basis of our reality. It's very interesting. And it just reminds me again of the proverb. It is the glory of God to hide a thing and the glory of kings to seek it out. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.